it wouldn't be so obvious. Proudly carrying her orange trophy, Trixie led the way through a narrow corridor to a kitchen that was obviously intended for restaurant use. I lifted my lantern and turned around. No freezers or refrigerators. No ovens either, but I spied a fancy grill. Whoever was renovating the kitchen hadn't finished the job. I couldn't get over how good the interior of the hotel looked. It was almost ready for business. Trixie ran to a back door, her nose to the floor. I opened the door, and we exited onto a small stone patio that led to a steep stairway with confining walls on both sides. No one had bothered to update this area of the hotel. An ominous feeling overcame me that I couldn't shake off. The stairs looked like something out of a horror movie. Trixie turned and barked ferociously at something behind me. The door slammed open, and in the dark shadows, I made out a man raising snakes in the air. My scream must have echoed all the way down the mountain. 12. I staggered backward. Trixie quit barking to wag her tail and jump on the man. He lifted off his mask. Gotcha! I slid down the wall to the cold stone landing, my heart pounding. I hate you, Holmes Richardson! In spite of my current feelings, his laugh was music to my ears. Holmes had been a part of my summertime trio when I was growing up. Along with my cousin Josh, we had worked at the Sugar Maple Inn every summer as kids. Truth be told, I'd never quite outgrown the crush I had on the first boy who ever kissed me. But Holmes lived in Chicago now and was engaged to be married. Still, one good look at his crooked grin and I was hooked all over again. He ruffled his sandy hair with the snakes. Ugh, that mask is hot. Please tell me the snakes aren't real. He laughed again and shook one hand, causing the snakes to dance. Nah, they're pieces of plastic attached to gloves. Amazing how lifelike they seem from a distance. Trixie barked at him and jumped up to examine the snakes more closely. He offered me his hand to help me up. I'm not touching that. He grinned at me and slid the glove off. When did you turn into such a city slicker? What happened to the girl who ran through the woods without a care and chased her cousin with a live crawdad? I scooped Trixie's orange toy off the ground, grasped Holmes's hand, and stood up. I dusted myself off, laughing. I'd forgotten about that. Too many years in the city, I guess. He tried the door. Ah, rats. We're locked out. He took my lantern. Well, come on, then. Heard you were the one who found Mallory last night. He bent his head forward. I didn't really know her, but Mark's a good guy. I feel terrible for him. Everyone has said very nice things about him. Not so much about her, though. I didn't say it out loud, but it did strike me as odd. Usually people only said flattering things about people who had died. We rounded the hotel to the pedestrian zone. Orange lights that looked like flames burned in the street lamps, casting an eerie aura over Wagtail. "There they are!" cried Oma. She, Rose, and Doc appeared to be waiting for us. "That was a very nice performance," she whispered when she hugged me. She reached her arms out. "Holmes, I'm so happy to see you." Rose, Holmes's grandmother, still wore her witch outfit. She marched over to him and hissed, "What are you doing out here with the mask and snake gloves? Tuck them away so no one will notice. Quick!" Holmes had no place to put them. He removed his jacket and draped it over them. Better? Rose wasn't fooling me. Holmes could do no wrong in her eyes. "Why didn't you leave them there?" she demanded. "We got locked out." Rose's eyes narrowed. "Did you see anything weird in the hotel?" "No. Why would you even ask that?" I asked. "Because the police felt it was necessary to search the hotel. Not to mention that it is a bit of a coincidence that Mallory died exactly where Obadiah did. I'm relieved that the hotel wasn't involved. The big gala will be there, and I don't need Dave throwing up any obstacles. Doc smiled at her. Rose, don't worry so much. I told you nothing untoward happened there. The death of that poor young woman has us all on edge. The hotel surprised me inside. I thought it was run down, I whispered to Rose. Lots of it are. A good portion has been completely renovated. People keep buying it, but it's cursed. The renovations cost more than they expected, and they run out of money? I could imagine how expensive it would be to refurbish an entire hotel, even a small one. No, it's the curse. All the owners go broke, said Doc. Hiram cursed it. I sucked in a deep breath. Rose believed in curses and ghosts and things that went bump in the night. Oh, right, I chuckled. I wasn't sure, though, if Doc believed that. Was there anyone in this town who didn't believe in ghosts and curses? A few of the ghost-walking participants still lingered. Rose and Holmes answered their questions about Obadiah and Becca. Evidently, visitors didn't believe the story could be true. Felix, Casper, and Brian made their way over to us. Cool story, said Felix. Sad, but most ghost stories are. I can just imagine every one of their ghosts roaming the hotel and trying to set things right. We lost you, said Brian. I couldn't find you in that crowd. I scrambled for a response. They evidently didn't realize that I had played the part of Becca. There were a lot of people. Brian stared at the dark inn. I can't wait to get inside. This is going to be terrific. Hey, Holly, want to come with us tonight? I think I'll pass. It's probably not good to have too many unbelievers present. Brian locked his eyes on mine. Scared? I'll protect you. Thanks, I'm sure you would. Knock it off, Brian. She clearly has a boyfriend. Felix cocked his head toward Holmes. Sorry, Brian has a thing for you. Like a schoolboy, Brian slammed his friend in the arm. Oh, if he thought Holmes and I were an item, maybe that was a good thing. It might discourage his interest. Thanks for inviting me, Brian. Time to change the subject. So you'll be hunting for the ghosts of Becca, Hiram, and Obadiah? Felix closed his eyes and muttered, Oh man, I hate snakes. I tried to be upbeat for his sake, even though I shared his aversion. Ghost snakes, I teased. They can't bite, and if they could, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't have any venom. Felix laughed and nodded. I hope not. With any luck, we'll see Becca. I think I'd rather deal with a panther than snakes, ghostly or real. Will you be taping the rattling sounds in room 3? Absolutely. It's amazing how many people in Wagtail have told us they heard them. Some have seen Obadiah or Hiram, but it seems like everyone has seen Becca or Dr. Wraith. Is Eva going with you tonight? Brian pointed his nose up in the air and mimicked her. I must observe the apparition apprehenders at all times lest they use subterfuge to perpetrate a hoax. Even Oma laughed. We'd better head back to the inn to get our stuff. It's getting close to our witching hour. Felix waved as they ambled away. Officer Dave leaned against a street lamp, watching them. He strolled over to us, his hands in his pockets. Evening, Liesl, Rose, Doc. That went very well, I think. Yes, I am quite pleased, said Oma. And our careful timing seems to be working, too. People are heading for the center of town. They'll be going to restaurants and bars for dessert and drinks. The merchants will be very happy. Dave, I said, could I have a word with you somewhere private later on tonight? Oma raised an eyebrow at me. Quite loudly, she announced, Rose, aren't we due at the Blue Boar? I wanted to crawl into a hole. Maybe you could come by the inn whenever it's convenient. If Holmes had the same reaction as Oma, he didn't show it and gladly walked back to the inn with Trixie and me. It was silent as a tomb when we entered the Sugar Maple Inn. With the TV crew and apparition apprehenders out for the night, it felt as though the place belonged just to us. Twinkletoes raced down the stairs, mewing non-stop. I swung her up into my arms. Too quiet for you? I think you like all the attention the guests give you. Holmes built a fire in the sitting room to take off the chill, and Twinkletoes stretched out to her full length in front of it. We found a bottle of white wine and leftover roast beef in the fridge of the private kitchen. Holmes and I worked side by side making sandwiches with a touch of horseradish. While I popped one in the panini maker to heat it, Holmes hit the refrigerator again. "I miss rooting through this fridge to find good stuff," said Holmes. "Most of the time my refrigerator only has leftover takeout and stale bread in it." "Did you learn nothing from Oma? Never keep bread in the refrigerator. Something about the cool temperature crystallizing the starch makes it stale." "That explains a lot. Either eat it or freeze it."
"Yes, ma'am."
"Hey, I found something that looks like pumpkin cake with cream cheese frosting. This is definitely on our menu tonight. And there's a salad with shrimp and avocados. Nice appetizer." He brought them to the island. "You haven't made living here. I hadn't thought about the food angle. When are you coming back to Wagtail for good, Mr. I have to visit every month?" He rubbed the back of his neck. "I'm proud of you, Holly. It's a big step to leave your job and your life in D.C. to move back here. How's that guy you were dating?"
"Don't know. Haven't heard a peep from him since I moved."
"That ought to tell me something, huh?" I slid the second sandwich into the panini maker.
"You deserve someone who loves you. I'm surprised he didn't load up and move here himself."
"Move? Are you kidding? He couldn't even bring himself to call me. For all he knows, I slid off the side of the mountain into a ravine."
Holmes leaned against the counter. Trixie stretched up and placed her front paws on his thighs. He massaged her ears gently. "I wish I had a dog. You know what I miss the most? We get a lot of snow in Chicago, but I always loved walking through Wagtail at night in the snow. It's so clean and quiet and magical, like walking in a snow globe." He snorted. "That sounded stupid, didn't it?"
I shook my head. "No, it didn't. There is something special about Wagtail. It's quaint and intimate. I hardly knew my neighbors in Arlington. We passed each other once in a while, but everyone was always in a hurry to go someplace. Life is more relaxed here. It would be hard to give up my job."
"You could develop the land that your family owns."
His head snapped up. I spied an eager glint in his eyes. "Every time I come to Wagtail, I wonder if... What am I saying? I can't see my fiancé living here. She's not the type. It's complicated."
"What do you mean?"
I held my breath, hoping against hope that his relationship was cruising to a swift demise. Not that I would ever wish him ill, but I wouldn't mind if Holmes were officially available again.
"Ah, nothing. She's just a city girl. Is that ready yet?"
"Load up the tray. I'll bring the wine glasses and Trixie's dinner."
What else could I say? Maybe I could weasel more out of him later.
We settled by the fire. I tore a piece of roast beef into tiny pieces for Twinkletoes and offered Trixie a bowl of cheesy, chunky chicken that I had nuked to take the chill off. It looked like chunks of chicken with carrots, barley, and tiny bits of cheddar cheese and apples. She wolfed it as fast as she could and trained her eyes on me. I accommodated her with a little piece of roast beef.
"So what happened with your job back in D.C.?" asked Holmes. "You never told me why you quit. You were a fundraiser, right? Have you ever heard of Ron Kuntz?"
"Nope." Holmes bit into a sandwich. "I guess he didn't make the headlines everywhere. Ron set up a Ponzi scheme and stole millions from people. Retirement funds, college funds, family fortunes. I knew about him because some of our donors were impacted."
"That must have been rough on them."
"It's kind of a double whammy. Not only do they lose their money,
but they feel, well, kind of stupid for being taken in. Anyway, my boss had been working with an anonymous donor for a while. Anonymous? I thought most people like to be recognized for their generosity. You'd be surprised. A lot of philanthropists keep a low profile. My boss kept the name close to his vest, which was fine. But one day, a communication crossed my desk with a big old RK as the signature. All kinds of red flags jumped up in my head. So I did a little sleuthing, and sure enough, Mr. Anonymous was none other than Ron Kuntz of the Ponzi scheme. Holmes set down a sandwich and stared at me. He stole so much money that he gave it away? That's so twisted. No kidding. So I confronted my boss, who made it clear that he wasn't going to do a thing about it. So I quit. He would have fired me anyway. It was a huge ethical problem. I felt that the people who received the money should know it was tainted. Exactly. And the people who lost their money through his fraud deserved to have it back. I might have, dropped a hint with someone a little higher than my boss. Good for you. They had to know. It could have put the whole company in jeopardy. Kuntz was quite a character. Now that he and his co-conspirators are in the pokey, you'd think the saga would have ended. But they planned ahead and bought a bunch of rare collector's items. His wife had most of them stashed at their house, but they can't find some diamonds. They're called ghost diamonds because they've been missing and sold underground for so long that no one knows for sure if they're real or fictional. Can you imagine? They're supposed to be worth a few million dollars, if they exist. Holmes moaned. Guys like that are slick. I wouldn't put it past them to have made up ghost diamonds to put investigators off the trail of something else. Hey, you forgot the best part of that story. Huh? That they fired your boss and offered you his job. Holmes toasted me with his wine glass. I smiled at the memory. Holmes had been in Wagtail with me when I received the good news. That was icing on the cake for sure. But, you know, as much as I liked that job, I don't think I'm going to miss it one bit. Footsteps approached in the hallway. Trixie perked her ears. Twinkletoes turned her head. The four of us waited for the person to appear. Dave walked right by us. "Want a snack?" I called. "You two look pretty cozy." Dave gazed at us in surprise. "Hope I'm not interrupting anything." "Don't be silly. Are you off duty? Can you drink wine?" I asked. "I think I'll stick with water for now. It's pretty quiet out in the pedestrian zone, but that can turn on me fast as people get loaded." I clambered to my feet, heated another sandwich in the panini maker, and brought it to the dogwood room with a tall glass, a bottle of ice-cold water, and extra plates, napkins, and forks. Dave sat by the fire talking with Holmes. I handed him his sandwich and water. "Thanks, Holly." He poured water into the glass. "So what's up?" "I wanted to talk to you about Mallory's death." Holmes sipped his wine. "What's to talk about? I thought she drowned." "Doc Kilgore has pretty much put this to bed." Dave's lips mashed together. He spoke softly as though he didn't want anyone to accidentally overhear. "I've always liked Doc. He's a cut-and-dried kind of guy, and I appreciate that. He tells it like it is. But this time, I don't agree with him." 13. I know Doc Kilgore has seen a lot of drowning victims over the years. He's an old hand at this, said Dave. From what I understand, drownings are often tough calls if there aren't any signs of a struggle to indicate the victim was attacked. Attacked? I don't get it. If there's water in her lungs, she drowned. What's difficult about that? Holmes bit into a sandwich. Why was Mallory there in the middle of the night to begin with? I asked. Wasn't she drunk? Asked Holmes. That's what Grandma Rose said. Dave swallowed a bite of sandwich. I saw Mallory at the bonfire. She was hanging all over that guy Felix. Then she joined the ghost hunters at Hair of the Dog. Val said Mallory put away some pretty powerful drinks. The ghost hunters finished up the night at Hair of the Dog. They closed it down at 2 in the morning. No one remembers Mallory being obnoxious or having trouble walking. I'm not saying she wasn't intoxicated, but I'm not convinced she was falling down drunk, if you know what I mean. Val told me Mallory drank quite a few zombie brains, I added. She didn't watch her carefully, but Val didn't think Mallory was staggering.
Oof, I've had those zombie brains. They're potent.
But not everyone shows it when they've had a lot to drink, said Holmes. I had a friend in college who could swill all night and didn't even have the decency to sway when he walked.
Doc said that Mallory fell and hit her head, so she might have been confused, Dave pointed out.
Okay, then answer this, I said. The bar closed at 2. I found her around 4:20 in the morning. Where was she for 2 hours in the middle of the night? And why was she dressed like the ghost of Becca Race?
Holmes had stopped eating.
Hold everything. Are you two suggesting someone murdered Mallory?
Dave raised his eyebrows and tilted his head.
Oh, come on. Doc and the EMTs realized that she drowned. Wouldn't they have been suspicious if they saw anything incriminating? Asked Holmes.
Of course they would. Of Holly. I nearly slid out of my seat.
You are not serious.
It came out in a whisper.
Dave rolled his eyes. Cut them some slack. It was peculiar enough that Mallory was there, but you were with her in the middle of the night for no good reason.
I jumped up. I had a very good reason. Trixie and Twinkletoes were running loose. It's not like I'm in the habit of sneaking around in the dark of night. Nor am I in the habit of having late-night rendezvous with strangers. I'd only just met Mallory. Did they think I was going to discuss wedding plans with her in the middle of the night?
Calm down, Holly. You're not really a suspect, said Holmes.
Is she?
Not in my book.
Thank you for believing in my character. My entire body shook with indignation. I sat down, still breathing heavily.
Don't thank me. Thank your Aunt Bertie. She forced me to have coffee with her this morning, but she confessed her little scam to see how fast you would come to her aid.
So much for my stellar character. The way I see it, you might have had time to drown her.
And you were certainly wet enough to have done it yourself.
Dave shook his head. But by all accounts, I honestly believe you barely knew Mallory.
Holmes met my eyes.
I suppose it's not likely she stopped to visit a friend. If she was drunk, maybe she fell asleep somewhere or was unconscious after she hit her head.
She probably went to Mark's to change clothes. She was dressed in that Becca Wraith getup when I found her. She sure wasn't wearing it at the bonfire.
How long would that take? 15 minutes? Asked Dave.
Holmes laughed. None of the women I know can change clothes that fast.
I punched him playfully. Wasn't she staying with Mark? I don't know where he lives, but she would have had to walk home, change, and walk back. Why would she do that? Why didn't she just go to bed? Why dress up as a ghost in the middle of the night? If she had done it earlier in the day, I would have thought it was some kind of promotional thing. You know, wandering around town in the hope that a few people might see her.
Dave set his water glass down.
Maybe she was supposed to meet up with someone who was playing the role of Hiram or Obadiah.
It wouldn't surprise me if you're right about it being a promotional stunt. Luciano or Rose would know who she was supposed to meet if that's the case. Or maybe someone was with her.
I held my breath. Dave's expression was grave. I had a bad feeling I knew who he meant.
Such as?
I asked as casually as I could.
Aw, come on, Holly. You know as well as anybody that she left with 2 people, Zelda and Felix.
Zelda? Spouted Holmes. Not a chance. Zelda wouldn't kill a housefly.
That doesn't change the facts, Holmes. I have to deal in facts, cold, hard truths.
Where was Mark? I asked. Did he call anyone to report her missing?
He acted pretty surprised when I knocked on his door this morning.
Holmes cut a piece of cake.
I'm confused. Can't you just declare a murder investigation?
We are investigating. We didn't find anything of interest in the hotel.
It doesn't help, of course, that Doc is the medical examiner and doesn't think anything criminal happened. He claims she might have got entangled in that gown she was wearing.
That's not implausible, I said. It coiled around me when I was trying to pull her out of the water. But even if it did, it seems like she could have sat up or stood or done something to lift her head out of the water.
Dave had stopped eating. While he was respected in the community, he had some issues with Wagtailites who remembered him as a cute little boy and didn't give him the deference he deserved.
They're fighting you on this, aren't they?
I helped myself to a piece of pumpkin cake, which I was certain I now deserved, if only to calm my frazzled nerves.
Mallory's death doesn't pass the smell test for me. I could use your help, Holly. Not yours so much, Holmes. Somehow I don't think you'll hear about this back in Chicago.
Holly, would you keep an ear to the ground? You're liable to overhear the ghost hunters talking about Mark. Sounds like a few of them know him pretty well.
You think Mark killed Mallory?
Don't go jumping to conclusions, but we always look at husbands and boyfriends first.
Then how about that Felix guy Mallory was hanging on that night? Asked Holmes. Maybe he wanted more and she refused.
No, I whined. Not Felix. He's far too nice.
Holmes laughed at me. What is it with you and nerdy guys? I thought women liked tall, rugged cowboy types.
That counts you out, doesn't it? I teased.
Sure, Dave, I'll pass along anything that I hear.
But as I spoke, I couldn't help wondering if he was really asking me to spy on Zelda.
When Holmes and Dave left, Trixie and I went to bed. As usual, the TV was blaring in my quarters. But this time there was no sign of Twinkletoes. I turned off the TV and heard hissing. Hiram must have been on my mind, because the first thing I thought of was snakes. I stopped cold.
Did rattlers hiss?
I thought they only rattled.
Oh, what did I know about snakes? Less than nothing.
Trixie barked in my little dining room. The hissing grew stronger and more frequent. Staying a good distance away, I kneeled on the floor thinking this was exactly how a person could be bitten on the nose. Twinkletoes nestled by the hidden pet door, hissing at something that flicked through it. A low rumbling sound spooked me. It morphed into a high-pitched yowl. I stumbled to my feet in a hurry and grabbed Twinkletoes' favorite toy, a stick attached to a string with a pom-pom hanging on the end. I wiggled the pom-pom in front of her to lure her away from the door. Jiggling the stick to make the pom-pom dance, I slowly backed up. Twinkletoes couldn't resist. She pounced on it and claimed her pom-pom, seizing it in her mouth and marching off with it, as proud as if she had caught a mouse. Without warning, Mrs. Muir flew through the door. That explained all the hissing. Clearly, Mrs. Muir had found her way into the hidden stairway, an excellent and quiet hiding place, but Twinkletoes had prevented her from entering our apartment. The proverbial catfight. At least Mrs. Muir wasn't lost. I glanced at the clock. Almost midnight. I hadn't gotten much sleep the night before, so I didn't relish the notion of trekking over to the Wagtail Springs Hotel to tell Eva the good news. Maybe she had taken her cell phone. I called Casey at the reception desk for Eva's number and dialed. Just my luck. Eva didn't answer. Either the Wagtail Springs Hotel was one of Wagtail's dead zones, or they had turned off their phones so they wouldn't disrupt the ghost hunt. I rubbed my eyes, no doubt smearing my mascara. I had to tell Eva. She'd been so distraught. If I were in her shoes, I would want to know. There just wasn't any way around it.
I had to walk over and tell her. My glance fell on the overstuffed armchairs. I longed to sink into one and put up my feet, but that would be wrong, wrong, wrong. I collected Trixie's leash and a jacket. Mrs. Muir watched me carefully, but I was able to step on her leash so she couldn't dash away from me. Picking it up, I cooed gently. I'm going to take you back to your room, Mrs. Muir, and in a few hours, Eva will be back for a long nap with you. How does that sound? She walked with me willingly, pausing now and then, as cats do, to sniff something of particular interest. At Eva's door, I paused to pull out my newly minted master keys, but found the door had been left open. Although I knew Eva was at the Wagtail Springs Hotel with the ghost hunters, I knocked anyway and called out her name. She didn't answer, so I switched on a light. Trixie accompanied Mrs. Muir and me inside. I locked the cat door to the balcony and made sure Mrs. Muir had food and water. Trixie made a beeline for Mrs. Muir's food dish. "No, no, no, that's not yours." I snapped Trixie's leash on her and removed the leash from Mrs. Muir's collar. "Eva will be back in a few hours," I told her. "You be good and stay here." She was probably worn out from her day on the lamb in the inn. Chances were that she would eat and then take a long nap. I locked the door behind us and tried the knob to be doubly sure Mrs. Muir would be safe. As we walked through the inn, I pulled on my warm jacket. We swung by the registration desk, where I updated Casey about Mrs. Muir. In minutes, Trixie and I were out in the cold, strolling along the pedestrian zone, which wasn't nearly as quiet as I had expected. A number of restaurants were still doing a lively business. Music blared from one. Another was packed with quieter patrons sipping from large mugs. Dogs and cats lounged comfortably at their feet. Trixie tugged on the leash to give a wide berth to a giant leering pumpkin. I couldn't blame her. Witches and vampires gazed at us as they went about their business. At the end of the pedestrian zone, I paused to look up at the foreboding Wagtail Springs Hotel. I had expected some lights to be on. Why hadn't I brought a flashlight? Would they all be upset with me if I walked inside and shouted? Probably. Downstairs on the right, in the room allegedly cursed by the locking door and the sound of rattlesnakes, a white image shimmered briefly in the window. I blinked, and it was gone. Probably one of the ghost hunters. A voice in the darkness said, "That was Becca Wraith. I saw her too." 14. Trixie pulled on her leash in her eagerness to sniff the speaker. "Hi, puppy." In the darkness, I could barely make out Mark Belinsky crouching to pet Trixie. "Your white fur makes you look like a little ghost in the night." "I'm so sorry about Mallory." Mark stood up and peered at me. "You took over playing Becca Wraith's ghost for Mallory." "That's right. You did it quite well. It's a pity they can't schedule the real Becca to appear like she just did for us." How was I supposed to respond to that? It was probably one of the ghost hunters. "With long white hair? I don't think so. Not even Brian would go that far. We just saw Becca's ghost." Oof. I should probably pretend to believe him, or just not disagree with him at any rate. What was he doing out here anyway? "Are you waiting for the apparition apprehenders?" "No." He didn't offer more information. But then he had just lost Mallory. He probably couldn't sleep. Maybe he didn't want to be home alone. Or maybe he just wanted to walk. It was sort of soothing to be out in the night air. "I should be in there with them, but Mr. Luciano very kindly gave me some time off." Of course, how stupid of me. No one would expect him to work yet. "I need to speak to one of them. Would they be upset if I went inside to find her?" Mark's head swiveled toward me. His tone was even and calm when he spoke.
Eva?
You can go inside. Come on, I'll go with you. I'd rather be working than thinking about. He led the way up the steps. The door screeched like one in a horror movie when he opened it. Trixie readily entered, and I followed. Did we dare turn on a light? Or would that scare away the ghosts? What was I thinking? There were no ghosts. But they would blame the absence of ghosts on me if I did the wrong thing. Can we turn on a light? Better not. I listened for the sound of footsteps. Where were they? The beam of a flashlight landed on my face.
Holly!
It was a loud whisper. Casper's fur almost shimmered in the dark. I could see why Weimaraners were called ghost dogs. Felix ambled toward us.
Mark, I'm glad you came after all. What are you doing here, Holly? I thought you weren't interested.
I found Mrs. Muir. I thought Eva should know so she wouldn't worry.
Hey, that's great. She'll be really happy.
Come on upstairs with me. We followed him up the steps. He led us along the corridor to Eva and Brian, who were clearly surprised to see us.
Eva, I bring good news. Mrs. Muir has been found and is safely in your room, waiting for you to come home.
Eva launched herself at me and hugged me as though I were a long-lost friend.
When she released me, she held her hand over her nose and sniffled.
Thank you, thank you. I'm so grateful. Would you guys mind if I took a little break to check on her?
Sure, go ahead, said Felix. We'll take care of things.
Eva started for the stairs, and Mark followed.
Holly, come quick,
Brian hissed at me. I looked back at Eva just in time to see Mark slide his hand into hers.
Uh-oh.
That didn't seem like a bereaved boyfriend to me. Trixie and I returned to the ghost hunters. They were clustered in a dark room.
Obadiah,
called Brian in a loud voice.
If you are here, turn on the light.
We waited in silence. Even though I didn't think Obadiah or other spirits were in the hotel, I had to admit that it was creepy standing in the dark room of the old building. After all, there must have been a nugget of truth to the tale of Obadiah. And even if there wasn't, many people had slept there, and given that it belonged to Dr. Wraith at one point, patients had probably died there too. And then a flashlight on the floor flicked on. I jerked in surprise. No one was touching it. I didn't see any strings or other gizmos attached. The light went out.
Hiram, Brian intoned. If you murdered Obadiah, turn the flashlight on again.
We waited in silence. Nothing happened. Just when I had given up, the light flicked on briefly. But there was no mistake that it had flashed on for a few seconds. Brian picked up the flashlight and spoke to the camera in hushed tones.
I can feel the evil in this room. There's no question that Hiram haunts this hotel.
Looks like we finally have proof that Hiram killed Obadiah.
After all these years, Hiram has confessed.
To clear his conscience?
To make his peace?
Only Hiram knows that. Okay, that was a bit of a leap. I didn't think anyone would consider the flashlight undeniable proof. Still, the flashlight had turned on and off all by itself. Brian looked over at me.
Do you know why the room with the snakes is locked?
I grinned. Probably because he locked it.
Haven't a clue.
Shh, said Felix. There was no mistaking the sound of footsteps downstairs. It's probably Mark. But before I finished speaking, the ghost hunters tore out of the room and hurried downstairs, leaving Trixie and me in total darkness without a flashlight. Swell. I felt my way along the corridor. By the time we reached the top of the steps, Felix had thoughtfully returned with a flashlight.
Sorry about that.
Come on, ghost, we're heading this way.
Was it Mark?
No, I don't know where he went. But it will be interesting to hear if we got anything on the EVP recorder.
The what?
Electronic voice phenomena recorder. It picks up sounds.
I bit back a grin.
Really? Ghost sounds? You'd be surprised what you can hear sometimes.
Felix, you're a reasonable guy. How can a ghost make a sound?
Haven't you ever heard footsteps when you know no one is there?
I chose my words carefully. I didn't want to be rude.
That usually means someone is there.
His chin lifted and he smiled at me.
Not always.
Back at the inn, I snuggled under my down comforter, glad to finally get some rest. But at 3 in the morning, Trixie started jumping on and off my bed, whimpering. She trotted in restless circles. I groaned, but quickly felt guilty. If she had to go, she had to go. I should be grateful she didn't leave me an unpleasant surprise in the apartment. I slid on my plush, sugar maple in bathrobe and opened the door for Trixie. She and Twinkletoes bounded down to the second floor faster than the speed of light. By the time I got there, Trixie was running along the corridor with her nose to the ground. I paused, wondering if she really needed to relieve herself. Why had she stopped at the second floor?
Someone screamed.
Trixie turned around, raced past me, and scampered down to the main level with Twinkletoes hot on her heels. I dashed along behind them as fast as I could and came to an abrupt halt. Eva stood at the bottom of the stairs. Her hands covered her nose and mouth in horror. I followed her line of sight. In the ancient mirror over the sitting room mantel, a face shimmered. It was a weak image, but there was no doubt in my mind that it was Mallory.
15.
Mallory smiled as she had only days ago in this very room. Lavender earrings dangled from her ears. Her face morphed to anger and grew much larger. Eva grabbed my arm, and Mallory disappeared.
"Did you see that?" she asked breathlessly.
"I did."
"Eva, you're shaking."
The poor woman quivered. Surely she must have seen things like that before. It couldn't be real. Besides, if Mallory's ghost had really made an appearance, wouldn't Twinkletoes and Trixie have noticed?
The two of them sniffed the Halloween decorations as though nothing had occurred.
I led Eva to a sofa in the sitting room. She sat down, her chest heaving with each breath.
"I'm sure there's a logical explanation."
She nodded.
"There must be. It just caught me by surprise."
She twisted and studied the mirror.
"Is that the same mirror that was there before?"
"I think so." "Looked like it to me." The edges of Eva's mouth pulled back. She stood up, still somewhat shaky, drew a deep breath, and walked to the mirror. Reaching up, she touched it gingerly.
"You don't see anything in the mirror now, do you?"
"No." Eva tilted her head to examine it from the bottom and the side. She turned toward me, licking her lips, and demanded,
"What did you see?"
Somehow I hated to tell her. I had a feeling she wouldn't have been quite so upset if the image had been of Becca Wraith.
"Mallory," I murmured.
Her eyes narrowed, and she peered at something over my shoulder. I whipped around. I didn't see anything unusual, just Halloween decorations and the stairs. Trixie sniffed merrily at the bases of the pumpkins.
"Did you see her again?"
"No, I'm looking for another mirror. Something that might have thrown the reflection this way."
She scanned the room.
"It's easy to manipulate a video to create a ghost image in a mirror. Any average kid can do it. But it had to project from this area."
Eva strolled through the sitting room, eyeing everything. She finally sat down next to me.
"I don't know why I'm so terribly out of sorts about this. I've seen a lot of strange things, and they always have explanations. Sound, reasonable, concrete explanations.
Well, mostly they do.
Maybe it's hitting too close to home this time?
Her head jerked up. What do you mean by that?
I spoke as soothingly as I could.
Mallory was someone you knew. It's more unnerving to see her face.
Oh, yes, I suppose you're correct.
Have you ever seen a face in the mirror before?
Eva tisked.
Oh, heavens, it's the most common schoolboy trick you can imagine.
She turned her eyes toward the mirror.
Except that mirror doesn't look like it has been tampered with.
She rose and walked to the bottom of the stairs.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to recreate it. Maybe I can trigger it into appearing again.
I joined her.
Eva moved around and waved her arms, but nothing she did brought the ghostly image of Mallory back to the mirror. We tried recreating the event. I jogged up the stairs and rushed down. Still no Mallory.
Eva, could I make you a cup of tea? Maybe that would calm your nerves.
It's not my nerves that are the problem. Someone monkeyed with that mirror.
Her eyes grew wide.
On purpose.
Suddenly, she switched gears.
Goodness, look at the time. I have to get some sleep. I'm so sorry to have disturbed you, Holly.
We said goodnight, and I watched her walk toward her room.
Trixie,
I called in a hushed voice. Let's go out while we're down here. She sped ahead of me toward the reception area to play with Casper.
Casey chatted with Grayson and Felix.
Suddenly, painfully aware that I was wearing a bathrobe, I hustled Trixie outside. She complied quickly, and I had no choice but to walk by the ghost hunters again.
How did it go tonight? I asked.
Felix smiled at me.
Great.
I coaxed Trixie away from Casper and up the back stairway from reception to the second floor. We walked through the silent hallway, but heard hushed voices as we approached the large stairwell in the middle of the building. I peeked over the railing in time to see Eva opening the front door for Mark.
Did he follow you?
She asked.
I think I ditched him.
She seized his hand and pulled him toward the bottom of the staircase. I knew I shouldn't eavesdrop, but I did anyway. I picked up Trixie so she wouldn't give me away and stepped back, hopefully out of their line of sight. In a soft voice, Eva told Mark about seeing Mallory's image in the mirror.
Hey, you're the one who doesn't believe in this stuff. You think she came back to haunt us?
It sounded as though he was gently teasing her. Their voices faded, and not a minute too soon, because I heard footsteps on the back stairway at the other end of the hall. Probably Grayson and Felix. I set Trixie on the floor and hurried down the grand staircase and over to the library. Peering through the archway, I wondered what I would say if Mark and Eva caught me spying on them. I needn't have worried. The door to Eva's room had just closed, and the lock on the other side slid into place. As Trixie and I started back to bed, I caught a glimpse of Grayson scurrying to the other end of the second floor. We arrived too late to see where he had gone, but we heard a door close softly. In the morning, I was up at dawn. I wasn't much of an early riser, but I didn't want to be a slacker. Besides, I hoped to have a word with Casey before he left after his long night shift. Low clouds clung to Wagtail. I hoped they might burn off, but the view from my French doors was gloomy. In a way, it suited my spirits, because Mallory's death weighed on me. The only bright spot was finding piping hot tea, a chocolate croissant, and treats for Trixie and Twinkletoes in my kitchen. I shuddered to imagine what Mr. Huckle thought on finding my boxes had erupted. It was getting worse by the day as I ripped open boxes to look for things but didn't bother to unpack them. Maybe I could steal a few hours to get some serious unpacking done today. In the spirit of the season, I dressed in a bright yellow top, black trousers, and a scarf the colors of fall leaves. A little bit corny, but I thought it worked. Twinkletoes followed me as I dressed, winding around my ankles and jumping up on everything I approached. I get it. You're hungry. I tickled her cheek, and she rubbed her head against my hand. What will it be this morning? I walked into the kitchen with her dancing ahead. Chicken delight or roast turkey? She looked up at me, the tip of her tail undulating in anticipation. I hope you're in the mood for turkey. I spooned turkey chunks in a creamy gravy into her bowl. Twinkletoes dug in, lapping the gravy first. Trixie inched closer, her little black nose quivering. Trixie, I cautioned, come on, let's go. I carried Trixie's leash in case I needed it. The aromas of coffee and bacon wafted all the way up the stairwell to the third floor. Trixie scampered downstairs much faster than I could. In spite of the early hour, a sprinkling of visitors and their dogs had found their way to the dining area. Most had settled near the panoramic window overlooking the lake and the mountains. A mist rose off the water. A few brave souls had taken their coffee mugs out to the terrace. The spectacular view of the lake and the mountains, not to mention the fabulous food, drew visitors who were staying elsewhere, as well as our in-house guests. We turned left and headed for the registration desk. When the door opened for an entering guest, Trixie took advantage of the situation and flew out the door. I dashed after her. Trixie! But the sweet little girl had gone straight to the doggy restroom. She trotted right back to me, happy as could be. Thanks for being a good girl. We had only been in Wagtail a few days, but she was catching on to a routine. Not that we had much of one yet. She followed me inside. Luckily, no guests were around, so I could speak privately with Casey. Nevertheless, I used a hushed tone. Casey, do you remember the ghost hunters coming back to the inn the night before last? Sure, I love those guys. They're really funny. Did you know they invited me to go with them? Rotten luck that I have to work the midnight shift. That's too bad. Let me know if they invite you again, and I'll cover you for a few hours. Gosh, thanks, Holly. Think they were drunk when they came back that night? I thought I wasn't supposed to rat on guests. You're not, but this is a private between the two of us. Maybe a little bit. They were pretty loud. Were Mark and Mallory with them? A cloud of sadness passed over Casey's face. Only Mark. Did he say anything, like where he was going? No. He went upstairs with the ghost-hunting guys. Why are you asking me these questions? You sound like Officer Dave. Just one more. Did you see him leave? Casey cocked his head at me like an adorable puppy. Come to think of it, I didn't see Mark leave. He must have gone out the front door. He must have, I said. But I wished I knew what time that was. He could have departed right away and ambushed Mallory, or he might have spent the next 2 or so hours right here in the inn. It seemed very odd to me that he wouldn't have reported Mallory missing. Hey, Holly, Casey said, shooting me a mischievous look. You forgot to ask me something. What? Dave asked if they all came back to the inn together. Did they? Nope. Felix stumbled in about 45 minutes after the rest of them.
16. No wonder Dave woke Felix to question him the next morning. That didn't look good for Felix at all, but he was so nice. He couldn't be a killer. Contemplating the implications, I headed for breakfast, Trixie by my side. She ran straight to Shelley. My smart little girl knew exactly who served the food at the inn. Shelley laughed. All the dogs remember me because I'm the lady with the food. Tea? Yes, thanks. Is Oma up yet? She ought to be here any minute. I pulled out a chair at the table and sat down. Trixie came to me when I called and tempted her with a mini treat. Shelley paused as she walked by. It's a little slow today. I guess the ghost hunters are sleeping in. They were out late last night. Country ham and Asiago cheese omelet is our special this morning. That sounded almost healthy. Wonderful. You have the same for dogs. Shelley eyed Trixie with a sly grin. Of course. Trixie wagged her tail. I blamed her insatiable appetite on her weeks alone, lost and hungry. Shelley brought my tea immediately. Steam rose from the sugar maple in mug. People all over town are still reporting seeing Becca Wraith's ghost in the Wagtail Springs Hotel this week. I leaned toward her. Shelley, that was me. I dressed as Becca for the ghost walk. Shelley nodded her head but squinted at me. Oh, really? I suppose it was you they saw the night before the ghost walk, too? I whispered so no guests would overhear. They're just trying to pump up business for the town by spreading silly rumors. You go right on believing that. I'm telling you, honey, you're in for a big revelation. Something will happen that will change your mind about ghosts. She winked at me and grinned, so I knew we were good. But she was wrong. I poured milk in my tea and stirred in the sugar. Trixie roamed a bit, her nose to the ground. Twinkletoes danced over to her, and after a quick investigatory sniff of the ground, playfully smacked Trixie, who promptly chased her through the pet door that led into the private kitchen. Had Mark left the inn that way the night of Mallory's death, leaving the door unlocked? Was he the one who had let Trixie and Twinkletoes out? They might have zoomed past him underfoot. But why? Why not leave through the front door of the reception area? His behavior that night seemed peculiar. Wouldn't a normal person have departed by the door in the registration area where he came in? Why search through the inn for an alternate exit? Had he gone straight home? Was that why he never reported Mallory missing? Because he didn't go home? I was being silly. He could have returned home and fallen asleep, so he didn't notice her absence. Or not. He definitely spent some time with Eva last night. Oma arrived as I ate my first bite of savory eggs with salty ham. What a perk to have a gourmet breakfast fixed for me every day, and no dishes to do either. Oma patted my shoulder and sat down. Gingersnap deftly avoided Trixie, who was snarfing the omelet in her bowl. The sweet golden retriever approached me from the other side, wagging her feathery tail. I stroked her broad head and cooed good morning greetings. I'm surprised you are already up. It was a long day for you yesterday. How is the unpacking coming? Asked Oma. I'm hoping to find a few hours for unpacking today. Eventually, all those boxes will irritate me, but right now, I'd rather jump into my new job. She rewarded me with a big smile. I'm so glad you took me up on my offer. It is a very big weight off my back to have you here. Thank you for buying the lock yesterday. I'm quite impressed that you knew how to install it. I gasped. Clementine, I'd forgotten all about her. Oma frowned at me. Is something wrong? I saw Clementine yesterday. Yes, I always liked Clementine. You should invite her for lunch. Shelley poured coffee for Oma, who took one look at my omelet and asked for the same. I will. She mentioned getting together. Do you know anything about her ex-husband? A man seemed to be following her. What? Oma's spoon clanked against her coffee mug. You are certain about this? She hid from him and asked me if he was gone. Oma gripped the mug. I do not like this at all. Her father is away at the dog show. You should go out to Fireside Farms this morning to check on her. I could just call. Excuse me. I rose from my seat and hustled to the office. The Wigginses' telephone number was in the Rolodex. I dialed and waited. No one answered. Not even a machine. Shelley was serving omelets to Oma and Gingersnap when I returned. Trixie raced to Gingersnap's meal to eat again. That was a good way to get bitten. I quickly fastened the leash on Trixie. She would have to learn to stay out of other dogs' food. Be glad that Gingersnap is so nice. If you do that to the wrong dog, You'll be very sorry. I turned to Oma. There's no answer at the Wiggins house. Oma shook her head. Go to see Clementine. On the telephone, it is too easy to deny anything is wrong.
What do you know about her husband?
I never met him personally, but I understand that they were very well off. Now I am worried about her alone out there on the farm. Perhaps you should check on her as soon as you finish breakfast.
A scant half hour later, I took off in one of the inn's electric golf carts. Orange and gold leaves still dotted the woods in between trees that had already shed their foliage. I recognized Fireside Farm right away. The white fence with long crossed rails seemed to go on forever. The paddocks and sprawling fields were impressive. Even as a child, I had been in awe of the massive white horse barn, with a chandelier visible through a lofty window. Four white cupolas lined the long peak of the roof. The Dutch colonial manor house sat back off the road, surrounded by ancient oak trees. Double white pillars on either side of the front door soared up two stories. Clementine and I had loved playing on the second floor balcony. I recalled the view between the pillars. The red brick sidewalk stretched almost out of sight between dogwood trees and perfectly manicured boxwoods. Clementine's home had seemed like a palace to me, insulated from everything else in the world. I turned down the long drive to the house, clutching Trixie's leash tightly in case she was tempted to leap off the golf cart and chase a rabbit or a squirrel. I parked, and we walked up to the white front door. It seemed to me that the boxwoods weren't quite as perfectly trimmed as I remembered. I banged the door knocker. No one answered. I didn't hear footsteps inside. I tried again. Still no answer. I turned and gazed at the sprawling farm. She was probably in the barn, tending to the horses. We walked around the side of the house and across to the horse barn. Fallen leaves crunched under my feet.
Stop! I have a gun and I will shoot you!
I stopped in my tracks and shouted, Clementine, don't shoot, it's Holly! I glanced around. Where are you? Clementine peered over stacked hay bales. She stood up, let out a huge breath of air, and dusted off her trousers, holding a revolver by her right leg.
Sorry about that.
Dark bags hung under her eyes, unmistakable against her delicate complexion. Is everything okay?
Yeah, sure. What brings you out here?
Her eyes darted around as if she expected someone else to suddenly appear. Oma and I were concerned about you. Was that your ex-husband following you yesterday? Clementine stared at me blankly for a moment, as though she didn't know what to say.
Oh, that! She flipped her hand casually. It was nothing.
It didn't look like nothing to me.
I see.
That's why you're hiding behind hay bales with a gun? Her mouth pulled to the side.
I don't know who he is.
She heaved another sigh.
He just seems to turn up wherever I go.
Have you told Officer Dave? Maybe he can talk to the guy. As soon as I mentioned Dave, Clementine appeared panicked. She waved a thin forefinger.
No, 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 not Dave. I'm fine. I can handle this.
I was getting a little peeved with her.
Clementine, what's going on?
Okay, look. She brushed her ponytail back with her free hand.
He's someone I dated in college. He heard I was divorced and simply wouldn't take no for an answer. I thought he'd give up when I moved back to Wagtail, but he found me.
I crossed my arms over my chest. You're such a lousy liar. If you dated him, why do you need a gun?
And you're a pill. Haven't you ever dated someone who seemed obsessed? I have kids to protect. What if he flips out?
Okay, I could buy that. I didn't hear any wild children, though. Are the kids in school?
I'm homeschooling them this year. Maybe next year, too. I'm not sure yet. But I know my limits. They're in Wagtail, learning French this morning. Kids pick up languages so fast, I'd hate to miss this window of opportunity when it's easy for them. Outside of menus, my French is pretty limited.
I knew that feeling. How about lunch at the inn today before you pick up the kids? Oma would love to see you. Her expression softened.
Really? I would like that. You have no idea how much I would enjoy that.
You sure you're okay out here alone? It's so quiet without any dogs around.
No kidding. I'm used to them setting up an alarm if anyone comes on the property.
Don't worry about me. I'm getting ready to muck out stalls. No one will mess with me if I have a pitchfork and horse poop at my disposal.
At least she hadn't lost her sense of humor. Trixie and I drove back to the inn. I parked the golf cart and strode toward the reception entrance. The doors whooshed open automatically and Trixie ran inside, but I stopped, stunned. I could hardly believe my eyes. Zelda was twirling a lock of long hair around her finger, coyly looking up into the face of the very man who had followed Clementine.
17.
Trixie didn't share my hesitation. She ran to him, all wiggles and wags. He stooped to pet her, telling her what a cute dog she was. I wanted to rip her away from him. Couldn't she sense that he was an enemy? Zelda called me over.
Holly, this is Parker Colby. He's staying in Swim.
He was a guest at the inn? I reluctantly offered my hand, forcing a cheerful innkeeper's smile. Holly Miller, I hope you're enjoying your stay. He still wore the day-old beard. He must have one of those shavers that leaves stubble on purpose. He'd ditched the army jacket for a brown leather one, though. Had I been asked, I would have said he needed a haircut, but given the stubble, I suspected he wore his hair tousled and tumbled intentionally.
I certainly am. Everyone in Wagtail has been friendly and welcoming.
Really? Clementine's gun hadn't been exactly welcoming. I played innocent, though, and changed the subject fast. What brings you to Wagtail? This ought to be interesting. He smiled, revealing white teeth that seemed a little too perfect.
I'm looking for a town to locate the headquarters of a new dog magazine. Wagtail seems like just the place.
I hadn't expected that response. Then again, who would admit that he was chasing an old girlfriend, especially when he appeared to have been flirting with Zelda? He'd said it so smoothly. He hadn't stammered as though I'd caught him by surprise. He must have had that line prepared. I looked around.
Where's your dog?
I'm on my own this trip, but I hope to bring him soon.
He flashed the pretty grin at me again.
Tell me, who would I speak with about real estate in Wagtail?
Zelda jumped in, rattling off names and handing him a brochure. Meanwhile, I was thinking that he played his game very well. I'd bet he suckered everyone in town. A con man, perhaps? We needed to be wary. Would I be betraying Clementine somehow if I mentioned Parker to Dave? Of course, Dave was so busy with Mallory's death that... I gave a little jolt that Parker noticed. What if Parker had something to do with Mallory's demise? I had no reason to think Mallory had any connection with Parker.